Yeah, you can do short. We have now a couple impressions.
Yeah. We also looked at Bristol University. That's also an enterprise-specific. We think that it looks pretty complete. It's very strict in a few areas, like you can't connect personal devices to the Ethernet cable in the university, and you can't use USB sticks or things like that on university equipment. But other than that, it seems pretty complete and mentions most things. Like the other group said, it's not. It doesn't mention malware that much. Yeah, it's pretty good.
And when you are a student of Bristol or in this position, do you know how to use your mobile devices, what is allowed and not?
Yeah, it mentions quite a lot about what you can do with your own devices and what you can do with university devices that you are given, so I think so.
So you feel like you have legal security when you act along these lines?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. So there were two reasons why we made this exercise. The first reason is that it's a different energy when you interact with this and start to look at the book and what is in these policies. And to make the first policies completely different task than to know criteria what is good. And whenever you have to write a policy, I heavily recommend to take good existing one as a template and go further into detail. So starting from scratch would be probably too much. And find a similar organization which has published and then develop it. The adaption to the single enterprise you write for is a major task. And anyway, even if you could write this by your own, the buy-in into the departments with the employee and everybody, that they think it's also a little bit their own piece, is recommended to make a project, to give an initial input and to let them work. Because no when they read so carefully as they feel responsible and have to be a part of the project team. And these are like the first distributor of the policies. Even not much changes or a few details, but the fact that you have a project, that you are involved into this project, and that you stand behind this project because you were part of it is very important. Just copy-paste information security policy does in this respect not help, because the project is about the first buy-in. The second buy-in is the first distribution layer, probably a separate project, and then to everybody and make it happen. And after a while of him pointing out that there are failure in treating, also the punishment should start and be clearly. But it must be a smooth process that everybody has some time to realign and to go towards it if there is not already existing such a policy. Are you agreeable that we make lunchtime now? For how long? For 40 minutes, 30 minutes? Well, what is the wish? 40. Somebody against it? So we meet a quarter to one again. And then we close this chapter and hopefully we can start with the next chapter. Then at the latest 2 o'clock we stop, and 2:15 is Stuart with his rhetorics and some wrap-up on socio-technical models. Thank you for your kind attention. See you soon again. Bye-bye. In between. Welcome back. It's now 12:45, and I think for those who are here, we start. Might be the other show up soon as well. I see that I have the wrong protection. So I try again. I have double projection when I launch this. Oh, now it's okay. So what we had now is the issue specific security policy we want to discuss about. It's writes details down to the enterprise-wide information security policy, and it must be coherent with the enterprise information security policy. What are the tasks? It articulates the organization's expectation about how its technology-based system should be used. So when you don't know how to use those issue-specific systems, it doesn't help. The documents how the technology-based system is controlled and identifies the processes and authorities that provide this control. So each system has a system owner, and this system owner is usually also responsible for security or delegated to another person, and this is written in the issue-specific security policy. It indemnifies the organization against liability for an employee's inappropriate or illegal use of the system. What I mentioned earlier on, it should be court-proof. Furthermore, it addresses specific technology-based systems, require frequent updates, because issue-specific changes by the policies, by the technology, by the way how the system is used. Contain an issue statement on the organization position on an issue. For instance, we cover wireless the whole area of our university in case of NTNU. Here is a topic list of issue-specific security policy. Of course, it's not complete, but in the standards you see what are the topics like NIST 853 or ISO 27000. Email, instant messages, communication apps is one. Then internet, web and company network usage, malware protection. Non-organizationally used issued software or hardware, so when you bring devices in, when you bring software in, usually you cannot bring software in by yourself. Organizational information on non-organizational owned computers, when you replicate the emails on your personal smartphone, for instance. Prohibition against hacking or testing security controls, or attempting to modify or escalate privileges. So it's meant that you have evidence that you can punish those who are hacking. Personal and or home use of company equipment. Removal of organizational equipment from organizational property. This is not already stealing. It could be also that you can do the job at home. For instance, laptop are considered to be taken home. There are other issues, other devices you could take home for a weekend, for instance, to learn about a new system in a device. Personal equipment on company network, personal technology during work hours, organizational telecommunication technologies and networks. This is more not directed to the employee, but to the unit which provides telecommunication. Photocopying and scanning equipment. We had earlier on a joke that when the hard drive of the copier is full, you have to call maintenance to make a new hard drive in. About secrecy, you can imagine what this means. Company information while outside of company facilities and access control credentials by users. As said, this list is not complete, but it gives a taste what an issue-specific security policy could be or could be meant by an issue-specific security policy. Again, similar to the general purpose security policy, statement of purpose, authorized access and usage of equipment and prohibited usage of equipment are main elements. Then system management, violation of policies, so the procedure you go into when you violate the policies and the penalties, if they can be assigned already yet. Then policy review and modification, limitation of liability. These are the elements. Implementing I skip and come to systems specific security policy. So when we have an issue specific security policy on email, it is not said which email client you use, whether you use Microsoft's email client, Thunderbird, or any other email client. And system-specific security policy would be on this email client, for instance. So the system's specific security policy is already pretty much into detail, and it seems sometimes more like a procedure to some readers. Standards or procedures could be like this, and systems as specific security can be separated into managerial guidance and technical specification. So the one which manages the system and the one which makes the technology. These are two aspects. So when it's a smaller organization, the manager could be the CIO and what is important for the management in this system and what is the technical specification, to completely separate document. And here managerial guidance, it's about implementation and configuration of the technology, and it has the CIA, confidentiality, integrity, availability of information as a goal, and the technologists, the engineers are informed what is the management intent with the system. And technical specification is more system administrator's direction, how to implement it. Each type of equipment has its own type of policy, so even if when you have several email clients, it might be for each email client different. And there are two general methods of implementing such control: access control list and configuration rules. Access control list is a often used technology in accessing data, accessing network. For instance, Cisco routers can have access control list on their interfaces. And configuration rules are more general, how to configure the system, and can be also used for this. Cisco had an initiative like 2 or 3 years ago, which is policy configured networks. So the idea is, why to have a system configuration when you can deduct the system configuration from the policy? And this was a big hype. I didn't hear so much today about it. Obviously, it's either for very large enterprises only, or it didn't brought the benefit they were thinking of. I don't go in access control list detail, but what it regulates, who can use the system, what can an authorized user do, when authorized users can access the system, so like 7 to 5 or something like that, where authorized users can access the system from, on campus, off campus, like government district in Washington DC or outside, how authorized user can access the system on any device, on one special device, on one device with special encryption. These are the things. And here you see Windows access control lists for various topics, starts administration, backup operators, event log readers, guests, performance monitor user, power user, and so on. So when you go into Windows configuration, you have an unbelievable amount of switches you can click to configure the system. Linux access control list looks a little bit different. Are also Windows led, and here you see that you can create groups like to simplify access control list, and then you can give some rules, configuration rules after you or before you have taken the decision to install access control list. You have to say the rules which belong to this access control list. And it's very system-specific. Also, firewall is like a system-specific device. And here you see a firewall. It looks pretty similar like checkpoint firewall, but I don't know whether this is a checkpoint firewall or not. That you can define what is in the firewall, what is the packet source, what is the packet destination, and then decide whether it's going through. And of course, there are combinations that management guidance and technical specification of system-specific security policies are in the same document. Might be confusing, but might be useful that you have only one place of storage. When those documents fall apart, it's probably difficult to find the connection in between those two. There is a large debate in general how much policies should be bundled into one document, whether they are separate document. As you have seen in the case study before lunch, there are organizations opening their policies and they have for each one a separate file. Vice versa, I had like books, 200, 300 pages thick, which is the policy framework for a company, a global company under the Fortune 500. And this is another way to do it. So it's kind of a little bit of taste. Then the next point I want to briefly outline, guidelines for effective policies. So for policies to be effective, they must be properly developed using industry accepted practices and formally approved by management. So boss, you cannot do something against industry accepted best practices. This would be very unusual, and you have to really justify it in depth when you want to do this. And formally approved by management, whenever you have a policy which is not on the right management level approved, there is no impact, because a policy is only followed when there is a credibility behind it, and this is usually by the management on the right level. Enterprise-wide, it's enterprise management. Issue-specific is probably a department head. System-specific is probably a supervisor or on a higher level, something like this. Distributed using all appropriate method. So it's not sufficient to do a security policy on the server in the intranet and say, you could have read this security policy. No, it's like a client thinking. You have to bring the information to the client. On what channel level? Today, people think about using social media as well. So there is a large variety of method. It should be read by all employees in case of the enterprise-wide security policy. In the issue-specific, it's of course a little bit different. The one which use these devices, and the system-specific is more towards technology people. Understood by all employees. Understood is a difficult term, as I pointed out before. And there are two things which influence whether it's understood or not. First is that people can read it, that they can read. We have illiteracy, that still 10 to 15% of the people cannot read. And if you can read, whether you understand the words. So I can read the words but not understand it. This is also very often the case, and this is when the policy is written in a language which is on a higher comprehension level than the comprehension of the normal employee. We go into this detail a little bit more. And formally agreed by act of or affirmation, especially important in US, because if you have no formal agreement, it's not effective. You cannot sue it. And uniformly applied and enforced, because if not uniformly, you lose the court case. So the developing information security policy, my advice is take a good one or two or three good one and check it against the standards, and then try to compile something as a first cut and put it into a project with engagement of all stakeholders, and then present it to the management. Here it's a little bit differently written. Policy distribution, hard copy, electronically. Distribution of classified policies require additional level of control in the labeling of the document, in the dissemination of new policy, and in the collection and destruction of older versions to assure that confidentiality of information contained within the policy documents themselves. So, why is a policy classified? When does it make sense? Enterprise-wide, never makes sense to have this classified. But system-specific. System-specific could disclose how you defend attackers. Yeah. So it's everything you don't defend is like a recipe how to attack you. Yeah, I mean ports open you can detect with a simple port scan. Yes, sir.
What is the organization of the business then maybe the policy would remove it, because if the policy then discussed that thing, you would, by just metadata, reveal what it was.
Yeah, very dangerous situation. So also a case where you have to maintain secrecy. So at high level policy, it's not necessary. At detail level policy, it's more and more necessary. It could be, for instance, a policy how to protect the research unit. And I'm sure that there are some nations which would be very interested in knowing how Norway protects the research units and give a lot of money. Policy reading, two issues I already raised, but the multinational organization that you have to address all languages in the enterprise. And here you see readability statistic. There is a level flash reading ease test evaluates writing on a scale of 1 to 100. And as a bachelor in university, you have a score between 60 and 70. But you see that the readability has here also reading up to 25%. And of course, those people don't understand. But they are still in scope. So the recommendation is write on 14th grade level may be appropriate for a textbook. It is too high for the organizational policy intended for a broad audience. So a score of 7 to 8 is preferred. So when you have done regular school, this is how you have to write it. So you see, out of engineering level, the challenge is to cover the range. Out of practical level, the challenge is also write simple. This is double insight. Then comprehension, again, when you can read, you don't understand if the words are too complicated, and you cannot pretend that a ninth grade scholar or eighth grade scholar can do, even if he was not that good at school, look it up somewhere what the words mean and question this. Then policy compliance, we talked sufficiently about it. Policy enforcement is the final component in the design of effective policies. As law enforcement, policy enforcement must be able to withstand external scrutiny. So whenever somebody is going to court, the policy must be taken. And if an employee is punished, censored, or dismissed as a result of refusal of to follow policies and subsequently able to demonstrate that the policies are not uniformly applied or enforced, the organization may find itself facing punitive as well as compensatory damages. The case in the book which is referred is that a guy went to court. It was agreed that he was treated unjustified, got a couple million, and the enterprise went bankrupt. So he had no job, all other had no job, but he didn't need a job because he was the only one which got the million. Automated tools. I want to point out only one aspect of automated tools, because it's an important one. When you have automated tools, everything you can backtrack. This means the one which defines policy is mentioned on the policy that he is the one which is responsible, and he is the one which has the idea. And some information security officers don't like when they are blamed for the policies they have created. So automated tools is a pro and cons discussion ongoing. And then, as in any project, the system development life cycle can be applied. I just go very quickly through to recall ideal investigation phase. Here it is to mention that the top management and the CIO should be included, and clear goals should be given. Without goals, no good project. Analysis phase starts with risk assessment, IT audit, to see where are the gaps. Design phase, it's about to create the first cut. You have references, you have examples, you have professional literature, and out of this you can compile something as an initial draft. When this is in a request for comment phase, commented several times, usually a process in a larger enterprise of half an year, you get the design phase closed down and come to the implementation phase. The implementation phase is explicit agreement that you have read and understood. It's very important. Then the question is whether end user license agreement, like the one of Nmap, a network monitoring and attack tool, that you write "I agree," click "I agree." Whether this is sufficient, I think in America this is good. And the maintenance phase we discussed before sufficiently, that periodic review should be made. And we come to automated tools for mastering policy. When you have a large enterprise, a very large enterprise, you have like a couple hundreds of policies, and this is too much to do everything by hand. So you need a tool that you can keep the overview. And ideally, and some risk assessment tools are doing this, you can make a connection between the risk assessment tool and the policy tool, and in some cases even the triple, that you have also the online information, the log files, the risk assessment and the policy tools, and that you can create a new policy like an emergency situation policy, and then the network configures automatically newly. This is more a research field than an actual state, but like 5 to 10 products are on the market doing this. But here we speak only on the Vigilant Policy Center, where you have a traceable way how to develop policies. Here you have the Vigilant Policy Center server, and then you have user, you have the company internet and administration side, and they are cooperating with each other and making this automatically. Also the review phase can be done automatically and will give finally with a revision date a new policy when you update it. Final notice. Policy can help to avoid court cases, litigation. Their first and foremost function is to inform employee what is acceptable behavior. Policy development is meant to improve employee productivity and prevent them from embarrassing situation. is it really meant for this? Do you feel that policies are supporting your productivity? Most cases not. This is a little bit a sunshining day. The guy has written this down. But this is how you can sell it to the people. And also that employees usually know about the roles. This means when you are an employee, you know you have a supervisor, and if he wants something, you know that you want to comply with his demand. And employees are much more following the rules of the superiors than many managers think of, if they only would express clearly. And these double binding messages that you can do both way around is a little bit difficult. On the summary, I think I don't have to go into this. You can read this by your own. So we managed to go through this presentation on policies. I think you have a fair understanding by now how policies are defined, what's the purpose of policies, what type of policies are around, how to build policies, and how to distribute them and how to make them effective, even more than the American way, which is just to have a formal agreement. At this stage, I'm open to receive your questions, if there are any, to the policies. What we do is next time a repetition form on policies, and I try to find some questions which should lead you into more in-depth understanding and reflection. Next time is for me mid-November. You will have once again Stuart, and then you will have only two lectures all in person on the 30th, and you will get some recordings of risk management, and then we have two lectures mid-November and end of November when we close down, and I think around mid-December we have the examination, which is a multiple choice examination. I try to provide you next time with Blackboard multiple choice that you learn the system. We do the next two lectures with me, Blackboard, that you don't have the first time a Blackboard experience, multiple choice, when you are at the exam. I consider this not as a good idea. So that you are trained and me are trained before, and then we go into detail. Any questions to policies? What is the cheapest measure to make something happen? Security measures. Policy. Just a piece of paper and write down, don't do this, don't park here. You don't have to make an electronic surveillance, you don't have to make a plug into the ground, write just, this is occupied, it's not your parking place. This is the cheapest one. And it works quite good. When you write, this parking place is occupied, I think only very rude people are parking there. And this is the same in information security. So some enthusiasm for, I know, rather an administrative procedure, these policies, but when you reflect how policies work together with the rest of the chain behind, it's interesting how little you tune a policy and how much happens below on the issue-specific and on the system-specific. When you go to a new level of restriction for protecting, for instance, the research labs, and you introduce this in the general policy that you have research labs and they have special rules, then those rules must be developed, and this could be quite a lot of work. And how to say on top level that at the end you get the protection you want of the information. Not that easy to know all this through, and think along this line as well to make it a little bit more exciting than just point learning points. So the steering starts from top with the will and the frame of what the goals are and how to behave, and is distributed to each single individual which has to comply with. Any questions again? So you will face my question next time, and I think we have a little bit time to go in developing the security program. So what we had now is a couple different things. We had a little bit about risk analysis, risk management, and then we came into the policy stuff, and the policy requires measures to be developed, and the measures are according to standards ISO 27000, NIST 800.53/-53. These are things which are done into the which are important to know. So developing a security program starts not with your idea what is a security program. It's like a well-defined term in the framework, and it's given by the policy what the object is, and this is how we approach developing the security program. But I forgot something, Ivan. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Still the same presentation? So what I forgot, and I think it's really time to do it now, is that somebody presents the case study, and since Ivan was interacting with me a couple times, he finally said he volunteers to present his work he has done. And here is his work. And switch on presentation. Doesn't work. Now it's working. Ivan, can you come here to present your solution?
Is it the latest one that I...
The one of Saturday night.
Okay.
Here is the mic, you know, and here is... so you can explain what you did.
Okay. Hello, everybody. As you all know that we had this task, Soho case study, where we were given a scenario, and we had to give our observations in terms of risk assessment and what we can do to mitigate it and what all impacts can it have and, yeah, certain things. So we'll be going through it. So I prepared this presentation with the help of Margareta and Thilo and Leon. So first of all, we went ahead with the profiling of all the users that reside in that premises.
It's a Meyer family, wherein the mister of the family, or the dad, he's an executive in Norwegian administration. And the lady of the house is an accountant in a communication company. The kids, one of them is an economy student. One is a high school student who's also supposed to be a computer geek. And then there's another one that's just a student. And I've also categorized their main utilization or tasks that they perform. So like the father, he does work from home one or two times a week. And like Mrs. Meyer, she manages financial affairs of the family and sometimes also work related. And so goes with the kids' homework and emails. And Jan, who is a computer geek, tends to experiment with new things and programs inside that home network. And Dora, she is just 12 and usually exchange games and stuff through external media with her friends. So I found it to be one of the points that is worth mentioning here. Other common tasks that were also listed in that given scenario were the computer is being used as a print server and a file server, and they use Skype for voice communication, and then they have online banking and financial transactions taking place in their home environment. And they also use social media platforms to communicate with people and, to stay in touch. And, we already talked about the email stuff. And I've also listed a few IT assets and an estimated cost. So all in all, it came to around 84,500 Norwegian kroners. And these all devices were interconnected with a 50 megabit per second connection. And they are using WEP encryption type for their wireless network. That's wired equivalent protection. That's very weak and quite old technology. It was introduced back in 1996. A few of the vulnerabilities that I could stumble upon during our conversations are these. Of course, there are many more, but these are the very common ones and very obvious ones and very important ones that I thought are worth mentioning. So we have no virus protection, no real-time backups because they're using it as a file server as well, and they have some data that is important from a work point of view as well, and for the kids as well, since they're using it for homework and stuff. And then they have unsecure printing. They could just print directly to the printer and no form of security there. Bluetooth device has recently come up as a major point of failure in terms of information security, as found in a few recent reports as well from major companies like Kaspersky. So that is worth mentioning. And then there's use of Skype for voice communication, downloading files from torrents that can always trigger some sort of a malware thing on your computer. And then already mentioned the WEP encryption type, and also, they mentioned that the uncle, who has been a helping hand in terms of information technology things at home, he has had explicit access from outside of their home. He could access through remote desktop technologies, and that's not a good thing because it's open. If he can access it, anybody else can too. They have been receiving emails, all the kids and the parents, and of course, we have many means like a phishing link or something. If you're not sure about the consequences that it can bring upon, then it can be a problem. So, So I found it to be one of the points to be mentioned here. And then also the little girl Dora has been exchanging games on external media. So that can be harmful because it's usually an .exe file. and if she executes that, and if it has some attached malicious code to that executable file, then it can be a problem. And then, of course, social media is a major challenge because it can be used for social engineering. It's a major thing these days. It's not just about somebody trying to push you towards the extremist side or radicals side. It's also about making your opinion, because you are what you see around you, I think. And there are so many fake news medium these days over the internet that can actually alter your own personality and the way you think. So that was also a point worth mentioning here. And then, of course, we analyzed the risks. As I already mentioned, if there's an infection on the computer, it can lead to a complete system crash, loss of data. And of course, if you don't have a secure printing, and if like the head of the family, Mr. Meyer, is printing something related to the administration work, and somebody happens to just walk into their house, he can just pick up the print. But you have a feature where you don't need any extra software or anything. You can just go into the software that you're using to print a certain document and just set up a secure print feature there. You can actually go to the printer. Once you hit the code on the printer itself, then you can take out the print. That's secure printing. So that was also compromised with privacy there. And Bluetooth is something that that was developed back in time, considering it's a good way of exchanging information. But usually with most of the devices these days, the same old technology is being used. In terms of Apple devices, they use something called AirPlay now. That's that uses the Bluetooth LE technology, but yeah, and it's also 256-bit key encryption with it. So that's a fairly encrypted and secure way of using it. But with Android devices, I'm not very sure if it's a very safe way of using it. And also, if you're using Bluetooth speakers or headphones or stuff like that, then it's definitely not a very secure thing to do. With the voice over IP over Skype, if you're using Skype to Skype communication for voice, that's perfectly fine because that's encrypted by design. But if you're using Skype to make an external call, then your calls are routed through your service provider. For example, in Norway, if you're using Skype, then it might go through Telenor or Telia or other service providers, and then it becomes an analog voice signal that is very easy to intercept. And if you're discussing anything very personal and very private, that shouldn't be shared, like your personal number or any passwords or anything over the phone. If it's intercepted, you are compromising your privacy. And then we have torrents. We are living in a very free internet age these days. There's not much control over what we download by the authorities. We had that Universal Studio case where they sued somebody. That's one odd case. But apart from that, I think we have been downloading a lot of stuff without any controls. And same is the case here. They have been downloading, but they don't realize what the consequences can be here. It can have a malware injection concatenated with the file that they're downloading, which in turn can execute on their computer without their knowledge and can lead to denial of service, data theft, or it might replicate all the data that is on the computer and can upload it on a central server that the hackers are using. Or it can lock down their files, and then they will have to pay something in order to unlock it if it's that important. Also, they are using the WEP encryption already discussed. It's less confidentiality and privacy is lost. And also, if you have open channels to be allowing you to access your computer from a remote location, that's also not very good. And again, with emails, you can trigger any infection on the computer or you can give away your secret information, and so on and so forth, like sharing information through external media and social engineering, as I already talked about. We made a scale for the likelihood versus impact scenario, and this has also been listed in the later part of the presentation, as Bernard suggested that we should also have a risk value, as he explained today, the likelihood multiplied by damages, likelihood multiplied by damage potential. So I was supposed to create one slide for that, but yeah, that's how you can do it. I have not described it here, but yeah, this is pre-mitigation, before actually we did any steps. We evaluated what can be evaluated as an extreme impact. So we have these five impact levels: trivial, minor, moderate, major, extreme. And how likely are they going to happen are rare, unlikely, moderate, and likely, and very likely. And this is the budgeting and how we have decided. A very good thing about our budgeting decision is that, first of all, without doing anything with or spending anything on the current setup, we decided to buy out 2 consultancy hours from an IT expert to go through the entire network to tell any or to detect any telltale signs of any intrusion that has already taken place. Because if something is already integrated into your computers or with your files or anything, even if we apply a patch on not letting any future infections get in, it won't be worth it because it's already infected. It's like if we have a packet of milk, for example, and we are trying not to let, and it's punctured, and we're trying not to let anything get inside or any contaminations get inside, and we put a patch, we should make sure that there's nothing inside already. So I thought that was a very smart idea that we came up with. And then after that, we decided the first and foremost thing that we should do is buy a virus protection. We thought of a 5 license virus protection. And we have also these values, at least with the products, the software products, we have actually checked online how much it cost, and we have given a very precise value there. So we picked up a Kaspersky 5-user license with 5 computers and 5 cell phone devices and 1 file server. And then we thought of a backup solution. You can have automated backup solutions as well, but we thought of a simple one that can be an external hard drive. And it can. There are programs available where you can do only the incremental backup so that you don't use a lot of time every time you want to backup. You can schedule a backup every day at 5 in the evening, and it will only backup additional data that was not there yesterday. Secure printing, as I already mentioned, that you can just turn on the secure printing feature on the word processing software or the PDF reader, and you're good to go. And we thought that there's no feasible solution for Bluetooth vulnerability. So, yeah, of course, we can always turn it off and not in use just to mitigate it for to the minimum level of impact. And, use of voice over IP, the PSTN scenario where we are calling external numbers. We can always be very casual when we are calling any external number and not interacting only to the Skype users and not share any confidential information over that phone call. And downloading torrents is not legal anyway, so we should always rely on buying the official commercial copy of software or any other media that we buy. That's always safe. And with the WLAN encryption, we should adopt WPA or WPA2 technologies. WPA2 probably, that's better. We have mentioned that they can do it themselves as well, because nowadays when you buy a router, you can go to the router page and it's so easy to configure, considering that they don't know anything. We can have one of the IT experts configure it for them. And it's probably going to take less than 30 minutes. And on most of the devices, there are options that you can limit remote desktop connection, for example, on a computer. There's just a checkbox that you need to check that limits you from accessing that computer from an external network. So you can do that. I don't expect them to know it. So, of course, I also added it as one of the items that needs to be handled by the IT consultant. And then email usage, social engineering. These are two aspects that obviously need some counseling and training from the parents, and parents need to keep themselves up to date with the help of magazines and internet resources. Of course, the use of external media can be taken care by antivirus programs, because when you connect any external media device, it scans your device and tells you if there are any malicious executables on the media. I have pretty much explained why we have spent where we have spent. So this has already been taken care of. And this is the mitigation or post-mitigation chart that explains all the aspects that we had mentioned in the previous slides. Like if we didn't have a virus protection, what was the level of impact? It was 7 before, and after mitigation, it was toned down to level 3 of impact. And stuff like that. And then we concluded that the network, the entire IT infrastructure in the house was quite vulnerable to external or existing threats. So we picked up a few points of failures that we could find out that can lead to intrusion into the network and could damage. So we have tried to take up a few points and try to mitigate them, and we have given the reasons why. And there's an aspect that cannot be accounted for, it cannot be scaled to any numbers. That's the reputation part. So I think if we mitigate these most common points, then we can also take care of the reputation aspect, because yeah, it's the most important thing. You earn a reputation after many, many years, and it's really hard to keep it up, or good to keep it up. That was pretty much all about it. Thanks. Thank you. Yeah.
Are you doing the decision matrix on risk and then send me? Then we do this as an example on the server,
Sure.
On Blackboard,
yeah.
And you have a report as well, or only a PowerPoint?
I have it on PowerPoint.
Only.
No, I have it on
report. Then we do both, and you will get feedback from teaching assistant going through this. A question, because you did nicely, but anyway, we have to think a little about. You said Myers should read like newspaper and learn about infection and adapt. Now, we are a little bit more than mayors here in this room. And who is regularly visiting, like reading this and taking action, or reading vulnerability pages? Please raise your hand.
There's a...
Two, yeah. Anybody else? Two have raised a hand, which do at least twice per week look into vulnerabilities, and you look also into websites whether what is new in attack and whether you are attacked. So two, you two have only two of us. You as well. Yeah. So three. Yes. What is your point?
I don't read it very often, but I had a point to make. Since you said we are more than Myers, so we know the regular patterns how we attack. Obviously, if it will be a brand new one, anybody can get tricked. But since we know the very basic patterns, and they are not so much into it, so it will be easy for somebody to fool them.
Yeah. But anyhow, it gives an idea. We are 15 in the room, 16, and only three of us have time. And honestly, I'm following a little bit, but even as a professor, I have my work with you students. I read your reports. I have to prepare the presentation. And I'm an Office package user to teach you with PowerPoint and with others information security. But to have a stringent home environment security, which more than just a normal small and home office can do, I cannot manage this. Otherwise, I would focus on this, but then neglect my regular job. It's both is not possible. So I think you have to be very aware what is your position in the whole scenario. Then you do whatever you can do, have a malware protection, be a little bit smart with emails. I detect quite a lot of phishing mails. So at least two or three qualified attempts per week. I don't know how many I miss because they don't show it. And some reasonable checks where the data are flowing out and so on, things like this I do. But of course I can be hacked, like everybody else. And what is the threshold to the next level? At least 50 people, a security operation center with at least 50 people. Otherwise you cannot relevant include increase the security. And this is the bad news about it. Only big organization can do it. And the small one, you have to rely on the off-the-shelf components. And they are not that bad. But anyhow, if you don't do the updates, you can be hit by WannaCry. I did it, I was lucky. And I do it regularly, caring for the updates. Automatically and manually. Yeah, but this is the sad truth. So, don't ask from Myers more than we can do. Be aware that they can do less. Yeah. Now the question is: do we start with the learning objective of the new lecture? It has something good when we do it, but then. Like this one here. Yes, it works. I think we can create a little bit focus. We have 10 minutes more on what is the security program about. I have to write down the times. 14:59. That I can make an index. This was when on the recording is what for the remote students. This was a proposal they made. So let's go to the next point. Learning objective. When you know more about security program, you can define what are the functional components of a security program. Then how to staff it. It's not easy to find people like you when you have made the master to staff security function. And the profiles are pretty much different of the security function. As you already know, there are administrators, there are more security managers, there are security technicians, And those working in the audit, there are a lot of different profiles, and to find the right people is tough. Then describe the internal and external factors that influence the activities and organization of an information security program. Internal factors are company given, changes, mergers, management buyout, sell a part of the company, a lot of factors. And external factors, how the information security theater is developing, and we have to react the program on this. Then list and describe the typical job titles and functions performed. So, like, it's a little bit like a job description collection of the various functions. And discuss the components of a security education, training, and awareness program. This is what Ivan has proposed against social engineering, that you make awareness and training. How do those programs work? How you do you set it up? What are the communication channels of those programs? And then I have some examples which are nice, because this is also something where you can measure effectiveness. Awareness programs are programs you can see whether you have from a special type of incident more or less afterwards. At the moment, social engineering is measured. Then we get like a fake mail that we have to verify our email account from a outside email, and then our university looks whether we click on it. And a couple months later, they did something again. And the third one, I was writing also immediately back, is this again a bloody fucking attempt to trick me out, or is it real? And then they said it's real the third time. So you learn, you can make it learn, and those things you can measure, how many are clicking the wrong links. And this grows the role of project management in information security. This we already did in the first lecture, because I thought it's a good entry point for your term paper, because you are learning about management, but you are practicing management in your term paper. And you can self-verify whether you stick to the agreement, whether you deliver your document, whether you review the documents of the other, whether you have your regular meetings, and so on. This is also part of the learning process on both sides, on the leader side and on the one which are led, because the requirement today is that you can switch roles seamless. Once you are leader, once you are follower, once you are leader, once you are managed. So this is goes back and forward. And the good employees can change whenever the need is from one to the other. Organizing for security. So security program is a overarching title to describe the entire set of personnel, plans, policies, initiatives related to information security. Does a new firewall be in scope of a security program? Yes, ma'am. Is it in scope? The new firewall, is it in scope of this security program? Under which title it could be in scope? Initiative related to information security and plans. These are the two things where it could belong to. It's technical and non-technical. And it's also about structure, how you structure your organization and the asset. What are the impacting properties of the organization when you build an information security program? It's culture, size, security personnel, budget, and security capital budget. So personnel budget and security capital budget are two things. One is how many employees and how many contractors you have or consultants. And the other one is what are you able to invest per year? Like 2 million kroner, 10 million kroner, something like that, for new equipment, for new security. Culture, size matters a lot. We will see this, that in a small enterprise, an information security manager is only a part-time function. Up to 100 people, for sure, less than 50%. Around 500 people, the main CISO might be 50 to 80%. On 1,000 and more, the main CISO is probably a full-time employee. So it has some thresholds inside, and we have to reflect this. So size and culture. If you have a policy in a military organization, the policy is probably completely different followed than in a community of artists. You can imagine what those two characteristics are. Military persons are trained to receive orders and follow orders. Meanwhile, artists are the one which should break all rules to go to new ground. And this is like a personality type, and you cannot hide this when it's on other topics where you are coming from. Function needed to implement the InfoSec program, you know, risk assessment, risk management, system testing, that you make test policies we discussed about. Legal assessment is like a risk assessment whether you are compliant. Then incident response will be a topic in a later chapter. Planning, measurement, compliance, centralized authentication, a very good project. Always good to have centralized authentication and one password only. So single sign-on is this called. SAML, for instance, system security administration, training, network security administration, vulnerability assessment, and more. These are just a few of the functions needed to implement the InfoSec program. And the next part represents large, small, and very large information. And since we have now reached 2 o'clock, I will close down my session. And in 15 minutes, Stuart Kowalski will begin with his session. So I think it's time to close down and we go further from here. I will give you tasks for risk management, these lectures, recorded lectures to read. And the reading, it's written already yet in the Blackboard that chapter 6 and 7 should be read. This is the information risk management. First, assessing risk and then managing the risk and compliant with risk. And this is also with the case study together, a whole set of training and